Hello, friends. Denny Pruto here with a lesson on the distinction between teaching and preaching. I have a particular interest in this subject because of what took place at our synod several years ago. When we came to synod, we were given our name tags, and on each of the name tags there was a designation. My name tag said T.E. Denny Pruto, meaning Teaching Elder Denny Pruto. Other name tags read R.E. Robert Ayers, etc. In other words, Bob Ayers was a ruling elder. The distinction comes from 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17. The elders who rule well are to be considered worthy of double honor, especially those who work hard at preaching and teaching. In other words, the elders of the church are considered to be either ruling elders or teaching elders. And, as I say, this distinction comes from 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 17. I was a little annoyed at this designation being put on our name tags. Why? I asked the question, where are the preachers? What is it? Do we not understand the ministry of preaching? We say that preaching is the primary activity of the pastor. But then we call the pastor the teaching elder. And we fail to make a proper distinction practically between teaching and preaching. If you go back to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul exhorts, "Let the word of Christ dwell within you richly, with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another." How is it that we are to allow, as Paul says, or let the word of Christ dwell within us? Of course, this is a command. We are to let the word of Christ dwell richly within us. Well, part of the way in which we let the word of Christ dwell richly within us, or allow the word of Christ to impinge upon our hearts, is through the teaching ministry of the church. And so we're back to this distinction between teaching and preaching. Notice how the Apostle Paul puts it in Colossians 3:16. Let the word of Christ richly dwell within you with all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another. Notice that the Apostle Paul connects teaching and admonishing, the activity of the teacher and the activity of the one who admonishes. Of course, we often connect that second term with the idea of counseling. We should be teaching with admonitions. Now, the Apostle Paul defines this activity further in chapter 1 and verse 28. Listen to what he says. We proclaim him, that is, we proclaim Christ, admonishing every man and teaching every man with all wisdom. This is almost the exact language the Apostle Paul uses in Colossians 3:16, teaching and admonishing one another. What is this teaching and admonishing? How is it defined? The Apostle Paul defines it as proclamation. He defines it as preaching. In other words, preaching involves a teaching that includes admonition. The two are combined together. And we see this in regular sermons where there is explanations of the text along with illustrating the text, the material in the text, and applying the material in the text. And these are to be in equal proportions, teaching and admonishing one another. This is the idea we get from the text. We proclaim him teaching and admonishing. Yes, teaching is involved in preaching, or preaching does involve teaching. But preaching also involves the activity of application and the admonishing of one another, the counseling of one another. And so I'm quite interested in, then, the practical distinction between preaching and teaching. In his little book, Preaching with Purpose, Jay Adams lays out a distinction between the preacher and the teacher, or, as he puts it, the lecture stance, which would be the stance we assume in teaching, and the preaching stance, the stance assumed by the one who proclaims prophetically the Word of God before the congregation. I have this distinction on my whiteboard. The teacher stands before the congregation and points to the Bible and talks about the Bible. In other words, he gives a report with regard to the content of the Bible to the congregation. And as I have in my diagram here, the teacher points the people to the Bible, or he draws the attention of the people to the Bible. And usually, not always, usually the teacher speaks about the content of the Bible in a non-emotional way. That is, he's simply giving a report. He's giving the facts to the people and telling them about the Bible. He does this in the third person. He speaks about what God did long ago. He brought the people out of Egypt, and they followed the cloud out of Egypt, and they went through the Red Sea. And so the teacher uses generally the third person, and often the teacher uses the first person plural. We ought to understand what he, God, did, and how they, the people of Israel, responded to what God said. So the teacher points people to the Bible and draws their attention to the Bible, speaking in the third person, and speaking about what God did long ago, and generally without a great deal of emotional content. Now here's the distinction with the preacher. What does the preacher do? The preacher talks about the people from the Bible, using the second person plural. Of course, in English, you can't discern the difference between the, in modern English that is, you can't discern the difference between you singular and you plural. But the preacher uses the second person. He talks about the people from the Bible. you can see from the diagram that there is a much more direct approach to the people in the congregation in the preaching stance. In other words, the preacher goes directly for the people in the congregation. The teacher uses an indirect route, pointing to the Bible. It's almost as though the Bible, although the teacher may have the Bible in hand and the people in the class or in the congregation may have their Bibles in hand, it's almost as if the Bible were off to the side and the preacher, or the teacher, I should say, is pointing to the content of the Bible over there, somewhere, and speaking about what God did at a distance. But now the preacher approaches the people in the congregation more directly. And, of course, part of this happens to be through the use of the second person, you. In my homiletics classes, I always challenged my students to utilize the second person more. The rationale for utilizing the first person, utilizing we rather than you, would always be, or would generally be, well, I want to include the people in the congregation with myself, or I want to include myself with the people in the congregation and not speak to them as though I were somehow superior to them. Well, you can do that quite easily by saying, now, you need to pay attention, you need to listen to the exhortation of Jesus Christ and respond by coming to Him. I need to do the same thing. You see, I'm including myself here, but I'm very explicitly utilizing the second person. And so, this is one of the distinctions with the preacher. And what does the preacher do also? The preacher utilizes emotion. The preacher is not engaged in emotionalism, that is. The preacher is not desirous of manipulating the people in the congregation so that they respond in a particular way. No, the preacher is utilizing his own emotions, and as he does so, he expresses his emotions in a variety of ways. He expresses his emotions in his facial expression, in his eye contact, in his use of his body, in his body language, and how he utilizes his voice. And when emotions rise, the people tend to be drawn into what the preacher has to say. And increasing volume does not necessarily indicate an increase in intensity. In fact, when the preacher lowers volume, the tendency of the people in the congregation when they're engaged is to lean in toward the preacher to get exactly what he is saying to the people. And you see, this is part of the use of emotion. W.G.T. Shedd and Robert Dabney and other historic preachers talk about communication being soul to soul. And the Westminster Divines speak about the people in the congregation feeling the force of that which the preacher has to say, or the force of that which the text is saying as it is expressed in the point of the preaching passage. And so the communication process is soul to soul. Now, if you compare the teacher speaks in a reporting style about what God has done as recorded in the Bible, and he speaks about the people of God long ago. And very often, in the sermon that is given to us in a teaching style, the pastor will come to the end of his allotted time and say something like this: "Well, I only have a couple of minutes left. Let's see how we can apply what we've learned from the text." And so, only, only a short amount of time is utilized in the application of the text. But now, in the preaching style, the preacher has his application in mind from the beginning. And the preacher desires to speak to the people from the Bible, yes, explaining the content of the Bible to the people and speaking to them in the second person, encouraging them to embrace the message of the Bible. And he does this utilizing nonverbals and emotional content to connect the people with the Bible. And of course, he uses his emotions in a controlled way. The preacher has an objective in mind. Now let me speak to you as you're watching this video a little bit more directly. God says in the Bible, through his Son, Jesus Christ, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." The command, friends, is to you. You are to come to Jesus Christ. You, whose heart is full of torment and trouble and trial and difficulty, you are to come to Jesus Christ. And when you come to Jesus Christ, the promise is that Jesus Christ will give you rest in your soul, in your heart, in your inner being. You will find that where there was deep anxiety with regard to the future, with regard to finances, with regard to terrorism in the world coming into your community, with regard to the weather, where there is anxiety with regard to these things, you will find rest for your soul. You see, it makes all the difference in the world when you utilize the second person and you speak from the Bible to the congregation in a direct manner. In my class, as I said, I would exhort my students to utilize the second person. And when I asked them to do this, some of them would recoil, but others would respond positively. And I remember one student who was the pastor of a small congregation who came back to class and said, "Professor, this last week I took your advice about utilizing the second person in my sermon and speaking more directly to the congregation using you rather than we. And I was amazed at what took place in the congregation. Because when I used the second person, it seemed as though there was a link established between me and the congregation that had previously been absent. Of course. This is how you and I speak with individuals whom we love. We don't speak to them in the third person or in the first person plural. We speak to them in the second person. I love you. And when you utilize the second person, a link is established. And this is part of the genius in the idea of preaching. And this is part of the vital distinction practically between the teacher and the preacher. In teaching, there is an indirect path the teacher takes to the congregation. In preaching, there is a more direct path the preacher takes to the members of the congregation. And so, remember the practical distinction between the teacher and the preacher. And if you're an elder in the church and are involved in teaching and preaching, remember this distinction and step into the mode of the preacher when you stand before the congregation. Thanks for listening.